Welcome, everyone. So, I like to welcome everyone the way I've been doing it, by quoting my guru, Swami Muktananda, who always began every program by saying in Hindi, Sabko bari sanmane ke saath prem se radik swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would always say that that was the essence of spirituality, to welcome everyone with love. And also want to welcome many people who are watching all around the world on the, what do we call it, the online, the internet satsang, the worldwide satsang, in New York and Ann Arbor, Canada and Japan. I just spoke to Sahadev this week on the phone, and your nephew has a new spiritual name. What is it, you ask? I'm not telling. And Serbia, and New Zealand, and all around Australia, Adelaide, and Byron Bay, Brisbane, Sunshine Coast, everywhere. So I want to welcome you all. And tonight's a special night. And it's Baba's non-birthday. You see, because of the Hindu predilection for lunar dates, and because the Western clinging to the literal date, we have two dates for almost everything. And so Baba has two birthdays this year, as always. Occasionally they coalesce. Baba's calendar birthday is May 16th. So he was born in May 16th, 1908, so he's 110 this year. But it also, his birthday was on the full moon, so that means in India it's celebrated on the full moon, and that's now. So, of course, it's early, it's usually in May. But so this is Baba's non-birthday. We'll officially celebrate it close to the 16th. But I thought, well, it's never bad to have a program that has Baba in it. So I'll do my program called Ganesh Puri Days, which is Baba's answers to our questions. When I was with him in the Ganesh Puri Ashram, which is an ashram about 50 miles outside of Mumbai, it was Bombay then, I spent 3 years with him early in the 70s, and then when he went on his world tour, I traveled with him, and then he dumped me to start an ashram in Michigan, in the U.S., in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So, photos, let's put some. And this is the Baba when I met him. He was formless. No, there he is. So that was Baba around when I met him, in his 60s, but you would never know it. What other pictures do you have? This is a little bit before I knew him, leading a chant, possibly on the road. Doesn't look like Ganesh Puri to me, but could be. Next. And this is later on, years later. This is in Ganesh Puri. It's on the walkway between the lower and the upper garden, and Baba had come back from his second world tour. And that's his dog, Captain. Captain the Pit Bull. Is that it, or we got one more? And that's Baba sort of around the time that I first met him. Love those hats. Okay. So this is Baba's non-birthday. And here are some question answers with him from my time with him. Actually, this first little dialogue is from the 60s. It's from just before I met him. And a woman named Mrs. Chadha, if it's the Mrs. Chadha, I think it is, they eventually retired. The husband was an architect, and they retired and lived in a little cottage in the back of the ashram. But anyway, it's some Mrs. Chadha, and she says, "Baba, I'm a happy woman. I have never suffered from want in my life. My husband's a good man. We have a good position in society. I have everything. Still, I have no peace of mind. I have read religious books. I daily read the Gita," that's the Bhagavad Gita. "I've gone on pilgrimages, but still I have no inner contentment. Is it that I do not deserve it? Can spirituality and worldly life not be combined?" Good question, isn't it? She's lived a pious life and still her mind tormented her. And Baba says, "Every human being has a right to acquire divine knowledge. He is in essence Paramatma." It means every person has divinity within them, Baba is saying. "For doing sadhana, this world is not an obstacle, but an aid." So sadhana was a very important word when I learned this word. Sadhana means spiritual practice, work on spirituality. And it's another kind of education, a different kind of education. The education of the being. It's not the education of the mind and the intellect, which is what our Western education is about, but it's the transformation of our being. And that's sadhana. And Baba is saying that for doing sadhana, this world's not an obstacle. How can this world, he says, which is a manifestation of his love, be a barrier to a sadhaka? The world is his own form. So there's no, you know, because in India there's a dichotomy between world and spirit. And so the idea is that you should, if you want to do spirituality, you should go to the Himalayas, to a cave up in the mountains, and be by yourself, avoid the world, and go deep within. And if you want to live worldly life, then you go sit in the city and you get involved in all of that. But Baba said there's no distinction. And he has a particular ideal image, just like you may have read your Plato. You read Plato back at university in your high school or university days. And in Plato's Republic, there's an ideal of the philosopher king. It's an interesting concept. It's Plato's highest ideal. So he's a king, which means he's a ruler, man of action, but he's also a philosopher, kind of like the American president. Well, he's more of a philosopher. No, okay, never mind, I'm sorry. But this is Baba's ideal. It's like Plato's ideal of the philosopher king. Baba would always bring up one figure who was his image, which was King Janaka. King Janaka was a great ruler, a great king, and he was also a yogi, and he became a self-realized being. So what a perfect combination. Great ruler, ruled the kingdom justly, and also had great spiritual wisdom. So Baba says, "King Janaka looked after a large kingdom, yet while doing his duties, he attained self-realization. Yajnavalkya had two wives." So Yajnavalkya was a sage. I guess having two wives is like really dealing with the world, isn't it? Baba's mind. "I'm a sannyasin. Still, you can see I do not deviate from duties." Baba's saying that he's a swami, and yet he had immense amount of practical things. The ashram grew and grew, and Baba oversaw all of it. "Even while living in the world, one can fix one's mind on God." Devotee, "I'm doing this, but even so, I have no peace of mind." And Baba says, "There is no peace even after acquiring the good things of life because they do not satisfy the inner self. They cannot give peace. How can a person find peace if he searches for it where it does not exist? You're running to the south while wanting to go to the north. Therefore, search for peace where it exists. Very cogent remark. Because we all, you know, actually every person lives their life with the goal of getting peace, joy, satisfaction, security, happiness. That's why we do everything. So he's saying we all want that, but we don't have an intelligent strategy because we're not looking for it where it is. Where it is within. And so if we did that, then we can find it. The devotee says, Mrs. Chadha, I understand that the transitory things of the world do not satisfy the inner longing. Daily I try to sit in meditation, but after 2 or 3 minutes, my mind starts to wander. Bhava says, since the mind has formed the habit of thinking about worldly matters, it constantly is occupied with these things. It thus becomes difficult to fix the mind on the self or to do meditation for a longer time. So make an effort to think of the self more and more. The mind takes whatever color you dye it with. Anger, greed, pride, and attachment are the different colors. The individual soul is the enjoyer of these colors or tendencies. The heart is like water, which is pure and colorless. The water takes up whatever color you put in, and it dyes the cloth with that same color. It's a long metaphor, isn't it? So also, according to the tendencies of the mind, a person experiences misery or happiness. And when I heard Baba first talk, this is what really struck me, is the all-powerfulness of the mind. You know, because we're in a battle often with externals, you know, and we think of, if only the externals went a certain way for us, we'd be happy. But he's pointing out that the tendency of the mind is what makes us happy or miserable. And if we have a tendency toward jealousy, fear, anger, depression, then that's what's going to happen. But we're not condemned, even though we have those tendencies, we're not condemned to live in that. We can work on it. We can transform it. Because underneath those tendencies, there's perfect peace and joy, which is attainable. He says, therefore, dye your heart and mind with the color of God, so that the world will appear to you dyed in God's color. Or you could say, dye your heart with the color of the self, the deepest self. Then your worries will disappear and you will find peace. And devotee, I try to do it, but I fail. She's incorrigible. Huh? What should I do to dye my heart with God's color? So what's a practical way? And Baba says, seek the company of saints and win their grace. Their spiritual influence will easily turn your mind within. In order that the color may become fast, go to them as often as possible. So he's saying, have satsangs, hang out with the saints. That's what we do here. We hang out with the saints and we stay in that environment, and it helps entrain our minds in the proper way. A similar question, this is from Susanna. I think she was an English woman. I can't remember quite. Might have been just a short visitor there. It was December 1971, this question was asked. She says, is it possible to attain self-realization while living and working in a city? So, similar question. Baba says, self-realization can certainly be attained while living and working in a city, even Melbourne. Self-realization has nothing to do with the place you're staying, but depends on how earnest an effort you can make, how firm your faith is, and how deep and single-minded your devotion is. That, I found that a very interesting statement. Three things, right? How earnest an effort you make. So that would be vital. The practice, energy. What do you do? How much meditation do you do? Do you say the mantra? Do you try to focus the mind? Second one is how firm your faith is. How firm your faith is. And the Shiva Sutras say, Vitarka Atmagyanam. When you have conviction, conviction is important. When you're convinced that deep within is the self, then it's very strong. And that's that would be solid. You have to have the right understanding, be fixed in that understanding, that I am the self, I'm not my tendencies or my ego or any of these things. And finally, how single-minded your devotion is. So that's the peculiar, the emotional side. So it's bringing together the doing side, the thinking side, and the feeling side. And when you have those all aligned, then it's easy to attain something internally. Baba said, now it gives a list of different people who attained self-realization while living in the world. And these are all drawn from the Maharashtrian poet saints. So Bombay and Ganeshpur is in Maharashtra, the state. And that state is known for its poet saints, Eknath, Namdev, Tukaram, Yaneshwar, great poet saints, Muktabai, all of these. And they were like early singer-songwriters. They wouldn't sing about their old girlfriend or whatever. They'd sing about God, about, you know, Vital. And they would go on little pilgrimages chanting the name. So he says, there was a peasant in Maharashtra named Sota who attained God while working the fields. He didn't go to a cave to meditate. Then there was another great saint, Chokamela, who was a sweeper, and he attained God while sweeping. That's a very low caste occupation. You wouldn't want to do that. But he had the lowest job, you would say from a social point of view, he was very underprivileged. Still, he could attain the highest because of his inner attitude. He didn't practice meditation. He didn't go to any temple. There was a potter called Gora who attained God while making earthen pitchers and water pots. And there's a story they tell where a bunch of these saints got together, and there was one of the young ones. I think it was Namdev, but he was not, he hadn't the attainment, and Gora came over and he hit him, and he said, it's not done yet, needs to be baked a little more. And he was very offended, but it was true. So he didn't require any solitary spot or to go to the Himalayas for that. Then there was a goldsmith named Narahari who attained God right in his shop while making gold ornaments. He didn't go to any sacred place to perform worship or meditation. And then there was a woman saint called Janabai who was the attendant to another great saint. She used to wash his dishes and sweep his floors and do other chores. She attained God while doing those things. Not only that, she attained such a high state that God himself used to help her do her work. There was another woman called Kanapatra who was a dancer. She attained God while dancing. There was also a cobbler named Rohidas who attained God while mending and making shoes. And Baba says, once I read a poem which comes to mind at this time. The poet said, were you looking for me, O man? I am within you. Baba says, do you ever forget yourself while working and living in a city? A professor or an engineer or a lawyer remain what they are. They don't become something else just because they live in the city. Why can't a devotee of the Lord advance on the spiritual path while living in the city? Why should one have any doubt about it? This is an ideal place for sadhana, talking about the ashram. He says, it's a forest. It's in a pretty rugged area. Yet how many rural folk do you see in the ashram who are self-realized? How many do you see immersed in meditation? Here you find mostly city people. One who's earnest can find the Lord anywhere. So, Baba used to say, if going to the Himalayas was so beneficial, why aren't all the people who live in the hills realized? And you don't find that. So it's not about isolating it, because we used to have a lot of ashramites who, you see, Baba's ashram got more and more filled with people. When I got there, it was relatively small, a couple hundred. But by the time he came back from his second world tour, there were a couple of thousand living there. It was a maelstrom. It was just going on. There was all kinds of things going on, and people were, getting very upset. Some people, and they wanted to go off and practice their sadhana somewhere isolated. And Baba said, "This is the best sadhana you could possibly do. Everything is testing you and burning you, and you really grow here." So he says, "One who's earnest can find the Lord anywhere. He whose mind becomes focused on the self will be able to attain it, wherever he may be, whatever his condition. Therefore, you're living in a city or working in a factory or office should not come in the way of your inner remembrance of the Lord. When living in a city, there are countless things and events taking place around us, but all of them do not affect us. Only those things which we take interest in are able to affect us. Take my own case." So, but it's true, isn't it, that our mind's drawn to certain things. I'm reminded of Gurdjieff. Gurdjieff used to not recommend that people had to live in an ashram or a cave. He would say, "Life itself is a great arena of spiritual growth, but only if you understand it that way." And his path he called the way of the sly man or the sly woman. And that meant that you would slyly live your life from a spiritual perspective, so that everything that happened to you, you would use as grist for your mill of growth. You'd use it to grow spiritually. You wouldn't ask, is this adding to my profits or losses? But you'd say, how can this uplift me? How can this make me grow? And that's, so this is what Bob is basically saying. Anyway, he says, take my own case. And now there's, I'm told that these days in university that you have to give an alert in case people's sensibilities will be offended. Wasn't that way when I went to university? They were as offensive as possible. But so your sensibilities may be offended by Baba's earthiness. Are you ready? Okay, here we go. He says, "For a long time I stayed under a lavatory in Bombay and performed my sadhana there." Conjures a very strange picture, but above my head there was a lavatory, and I made a hut underneath it in an open plot and pursued my practice there. Alongside of that lavatory was the shop belonging to Malti's father. He used to serve me with food. So Malti is Guru Mai, Chidvasananda, and so her father, whose name was Sena, was the father both of Malti and Subhash, who grew my and little Nityananda. And he was a longtime devotee of Baba. So he used to serve him with food. He had a South Indian restaurant with dosa and idli, you know. That's why we have such affection for each other, he and Sena. Nobody would come to meet me because I was living in such a dirty place. At that time, I did not enjoy any of the facilities which you enjoy here. There were no clean bathroom, nor were there any comfortable beds. I did not have all my meals cooked punctually for me and served hot and fresh. See, Baba's kind of telling us, the audience, how good we have it there. You know, don't complain, shut up, this is what's happening. Yet my sadhana was not affected. Most people lack in intelligence. And generally it's the most unintelligent who consider themselves to be the most intelligent. Have you noticed that? How much worse is this lavatory, his points to his abdomen, than the other lavatory? That does not produce feces. The abdomen is nothing but a feces-producing factory. And this has been amended for publication. When Professor Jain translated, he'd say that we are just shit factories. They're shit factories, that's a human being. They put in food and they come out shit. So we're shit factories. That's how good we are. He says, a lavatory is the place where feces is discarded, but is being manufactured right here. People are not revolted by their abdomens, but are repelled by lavatories. But it's certainly possible to attain self-realization anywhere. Typical Baba. Okay, another one on attitude about food. After that, it might be a little difficult, but clean your mind. And this was from John R. And I remember, American fellow, and he had some kind of thing about health and food. But he says, what's the significance of the chant that we sing before eating? Does the name of Ram have a relation with food? We used to sing Sri Ram, Jai Ram. We sing it before dinner, right? How's it go? Sing with me. Sri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Jai Ram. So imagine the big dining hall. Everyone's sitting on the floor, on carpet, on long carpets, sitting in rows like that. And the food is served on either leaf plates or in tallies with metal thing. And people go around serving dish, you know, one dish at a time. And they're chanting that all through that until finally everyone is served. And then they go, Satguru Nat Naraj Ki Jai, and then they start to eat. So the Baba says, but he uses it to launch himself. Baba says, this is a good question. We're a little short of time today, but I'll answer it anyway. However, ask it again sometime. The food that you take will strengthen the feeling with which you take it because it comes permeated with that attitude. Food is not ordinary matter. It carries the feelings of the person who gives it and the one who is serving it. When I go out on tour, there are many people who buy new beds and bedding for me and do not allow anyone else to use them. When I ask why, they say they want the pure particles of my Shakti to pervade the item so that later on when they use them, that Shakti will affect them. So that, because Baba had a lot of spiritual energy, they wanted to, you know, have him use those seats and then they would use them later. In course of time, your mind becomes like the sort of food which you eat. While eating, the feeling with which you're eating will permeate all the cells of your body. We use the name Ram to purify the food. Before lunch, we have chanting for half an hour. And during that half hour, our inner beings are saturated by the feelings of divine emotion. Then until the food is fully served, we keep on singing the name of Ram. Generally, I eat in complete silence. All around me, there are pictures of my guru. Right in front, there's a picture of Saraswati, the goddess of learning. While eating, I look at the picture again and again. There was a great saint in this region who said, you should repeat the name of the Lord or your mantra with every morsel of food that you take. And in that way, every morsel will become permeated with the influence, with that influence. There's a traditional rite which people don't understand nowadays, according to which a little water is taken in your palm and your mantra is recited, and that water becomes permeated with the influence of the mantra. Then the water is sprinkled around the food three times. And that way the food also becomes permeated with the power of the mantra. We actually used to do that, but not exactly that. As I remember it, we would take put some water in the hand and then repeat the mantra 11 times. Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah Shivaya. And then circle the dish like that once and then drink the rest. That's what we did. You don't have to do that here, especially if you're sitting at the table. He says, but the point is that he's emphasizing having your mind and your emotions in a certain state when you take food. And that affects, obviously affects your digestion and so on, which affects your health. He says, all beings consist of food. They come into being by food and live by food. finally they merge into food. We're nothing but food. When you think about it, all we are is the food we've eaten. Huh? The food which springs from the earth is eaten by the body. As a result of the food springing from the earth, you experience pleasure and pain, and you return to the earth. And therefore, food has been called Supreme Brahman. It's the supreme. The scriptures say that one should take food with feelings of devotion and reverence, as though it were the worship of the Lord, sitting in a proper posture and eating with enjoyment. It's for this reason I built such a beautiful dining hall, and I got the mats, because you must not sit on the bare floor while eating food. To eat food is to eat God's gift. It must be honored like God. You should eat your food with very pure and holy feelings. If you begin to look at it in other terms, you're a hellish sinner. Those who keep on grumbling that they did not get enough chapatis, or that the chutney was too hot for them, or that they were not served properly, are sinners. That shows that they're going to the dining hall just to fill their bellies and not going there to partake of prasad, which is blessed food. One who does not serve impartially to all is also a hellish sinner. It means he gives some more and some less when you serve. You should always eat little and in silence. Eat with a pure feeling of devotion. The Upanishads say that food is the supreme being himself. A great poet saint has said, do not consider food as a means of filling the belly or as a means of getting pleasure. You must consider it as a sacred act, an act of worship or sacrifice. So therefore, while you eat, you should eat with the feeling that whatever you are eating, you're offering to the Lord. So how's that for attitude? You like that? Even when you go to McDonald's, that's how you should think. You see, our habits are really antithetical to that, aren't they? And finally, two short questions on mantra. We recently had a intensive and a retreat on the mantra. Mantra is a great practice. To repeat the mantra, Om Namah Shivaya, is a very good way of calming the mind. You know, it's a fallacy to think you have to completely blank the mind, but you don't want the mind to go into negative thought patterns, into negative emotions, into fear and anger and depression and so on. So to prevent that, use the mantra, which focuses the mind, keeps it on an even keel. So this is a question from Lowell, who was a Canadian fellow who was the head of the Upper Garden there for a while and even visited here once about 10 years ago. Not one of you remembers him. Maybe 10, maybe 15 years ago. He says, even after repeating the mantra continuously in the ashram and in my daily life, bad thoughts still come to my mind. How can I get rid of them? See, every yogi has this problem. Even though we do practice, it seems like there's an endless supply of bad thoughts. You may not have enough money. You may not have enough of this and that. But bad thoughts, we have plenty of. Is anybody lacking in bad thoughts? Negative thoughts and tearing thoughts? No? Baba says, as you keep repeating the mantra, bad thoughts will be destroyed. From the same place where the mantra pulsates, bad thoughts also pulsate. There is a central nerve called the Sushumna Nadi. That's the subtle spine, you could say. All these thoughts and fantasies arise and subside there. The impressions of countless lifetimes are there. So this is the place within where there are memories, both conscious memories and unconscious memories. It's the place where your unconscious exists, these tendencies that you can't account for. He says, Baba says, you should repeat the mantra over and over again and try to purify the mind. If you pray to God with compassion, the mind becomes pure very quickly and you have no bad thoughts. By purity of mind, he means the mind is quiet and fulfilled and balanced. If you do not value time and if you do not respect God, then you let your mind wander here and there all the time. In the Ramayana, which is a scripture, The question is asked, what is the fearful time? The answer was, the fearful time, which is like death, comes when the mind forgets about the self and starts wandering here and there. What's the bad time? When you lose the discipline, control of the mind. The state that you're in is fearful. It is nothing but death. Isn't it true that when your mind goes negative, it's like death itself? There's no torture like it. When it starts to hate you and beat yourself up and regret and come like that. Therefore, you should immediately take refuge in God's name. Even after repeating your mantra, of course, thoughts and fancies arise in your mind. But in between, just keep repeating your mantra and the mind will become pure. So I've often told my story where I was having a lot of trouble with stuff that was rising up in me. A lot of fear was coming up. And Baba insisted that I say the mantra. And the mantra cleared it up in very short order. So it's a great antidote. Just take very seriously that sometimes the mind goes down a negative groove. Don't know why it happens. It's some encounter, some memory, something happens. And you go down that groove. And the best antidote to that is to just sit and repeat the mantra and overcome it. It can be done. And finally, last question. For the past few years, this is a woman named Emma, who I think was English, but I'm not sure. Past few years, I don't remember her very well. Maybe she was Jane Austen's character. For the past few years, I've been overcome with fear of violence. I've been meditating, and it helps somewhat, but the fear is overwhelming. Baba says, there's a place of fear in the heart, and if your mind touches that, you feel fear. The seers have described the heart chakra as a lotus with 12 petals. He would often repeat this. It's interesting. Like there are 12 petals. And they're different emotions. The mind keeps traveling from one petal to another. Whichever petal consciousness settles on for a while, it experiences the quality or characteristic of that petal. If consciousness were to light on the white petal, you would experience devotion to God. Likewise, there's a petal related to fear. And if your mind reaches there, it experiences fear. Very interesting idea, isn't it? In meditation also, this is what happens. Keep meditating, and your consciousness will move from the place of fear to the place of fearlessness. Repeat the mantra, because the mantra destroys fear. So, let's meditate. But, you know, a lot of people have spoken to me about the program last week on Shiva process. And as we say, we're going to do a retreat on it and so on. But I thought I'd give a little taste of the Shiva process meditation to begin meditation. Just a short guided meditation and then we'll meditate, okay? So we're going to look at four centers within the body. In the navel area, the heart area, the throat area, and the brow, the third eye. And I'm just going to ask you to experience the feeling there, and then we're going to release or expand the feeling in each one, and then we'll go into meditation. Okay? Okay, so let's close our eyes and become aware of the feeling in the navel area. Feel the feeling in the navel area. Does that feeling feel tense or relaxed? Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Now bring the thought in, I let go, I surrender into the navel area. Just release all tension in the navel area. See how much tension you can let go right now. Let it open. Now let's bring our attention up to the heart area. The heart, of course, is the emotional center. Feel the feeling in the heart area. Is it pleasant or unpleasant? Do you feel sad or happy or some other feeling? The highest and best feeling for the heart to feel is peace and love. So bring these feelings into the heart. I feel peaceful. I feel love. Send your love to those you love. I feel love. I feel peaceful. Now let's bring our attention to the throat area. This is communication center. And feel the feeling in the throat area. Sometimes we feel the words and the feelings blocked in the throat area. So feel the feeling in the throat area. Does it feel blocked or open? Bring in the feeling of freedom and expression. I express myself, I can speak, I speak words of love, peaceful words of love. Bring that into the throat area. And now the third eye, let's go to the third eye. This is the intellectual center. Sometimes we're confused. It feels dark, impenetrable. Sometimes it feels light and sprightly. So feel the feeling in the third eye. Does it feel open or blocked? Is it full of light or is it dark? Bring in the idea that my third eye is filled with light, filled with understanding. Now we'll meditate for about 7 minutes. You can say the mantra, or you can go to the center that was the best and the most open and just travel in it. We'll meditate now for 7 minutes. Once again, with great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. Satguru Nath Maharaj Ki Jai.